Volám sa Katarína Stríčková a teším sa, že v rámci podcastov denníka N počúvate môj podcast V ženskom rode, ktorý tvoria rozhovory s inšpiratívnymi ženami. V ženskom rode sú totiž v slovenčine tie najsilnejšie slova: dôvera, pravda, spoľahlivosť, odvaha, múdrosť či pokora. Ale aj zrada, pýcha, nevera, závisť, prehra či smrť. Osobne som presvedčená, že nad nimi všetkými stoja láska a nádej. Nech vás naplňajú po každom vypočutom rozhovore.
Judith Sándor is a Hungarian lawyer, bioethicist and author, as well as a full professor at the Faculty of Political Science, Legal Studies and Gender Studies of the Central European University, Budapest. In today's episode, I was happy to speak to her via telephone about many pressing issues, including consequences of the current global pandemics. As she explains,
I think it was a huge human trauma for the whole world, and we should learn from it.
Listen further to our conversation in Feminine Gender Podcast and her inspiring thoughts on health, human rights, as well as ethics of human cloning or genome editing. What has COVID and the still ongoing pandemic taught us? Was it something fundamental from the point of view of ethics in medicine?
Thank you very much for your question. I believe that in the spring of 2020, we became a part of a worldwide human experiment, participating in the first global top-down attempt at confinement in modern history, and of course not voluntarily, but subjecting ourselves to restrictive measures affecting all spheres of our life. And this was very unusual. Since the Spanish flu, such a major global pandemic didn't occur in the world. Of course, there were some local pandemics, but in this scale, with all the measures, this was entirely new for the humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the major lessons drawn from this unusual experience is the role of healthcare and health policy in our life. I think that after the Second World War, there was a unique opportunity to see how health was important and human rights in general, how important they were. But since then, in the last couple of decades, we tend to forget about the importance of healthcare. In my field, we were previously discussing of the role of biotechnology, artificial intelligence, for instance, genome editing, and many other topics, artificial womb, for instance. And suddenly we found ourselves of a struggle for basic care. I do hope that after the pandemic, we will plan our healthcare system differently. And we recognize that without access to health, we are unable to exercise or other civil liberties. And of course, these tremendous losses, which actually Central and Eastern Europe had tremendous losses during the third wave of the pandemic, we will learn to value of human life and also the healthcare, which was transformed one day to another. Of course, temporarily, we had to give up some of our privacy. We have to report our status. We had to be subjected to repeated testing, test results, and it became often of a precondition to go to work or to go to different places. People who have never talked about biology or never talked about the differences between a virus and a bacterium, for instance, they started to be concerned about their antibody they were concerning about of different types of tests. They were looking for access to different types of vaccines. We know that people are differently situated now, for instance, dependent on what type of vaccines they could have access in terms of travel, in terms of many other conditions. So or immunity certificates. I think we couldn't have imagined that, let's say, even 2-3 years ago, that in addition to a passport, one thing which is very precious to us now is a small plastic card or a certificate which testifies that we are either immunized for because of the disease or we have the necessary number of two numbers, usually the vaccine, so we are eligible for travel, we are eligible to enter into the restaurant. This means that some part of our identity has been attached to our biological status, and it is very new in the 21st century, and I think it has a lot of repercussions in a way we are looking at humans also in the future.
My fundamental question is, who owns a human body? Who owns my body? And who decides that?
Pandemia showed us that previously we tend to believe that everything related to human body should be based on a solely autonomous decision. And I think I worked in the field of human rights, and I very much engaged with these types of concerns, and I think it's very important, and it has incredible results. But now there is a kind of a societal aspect of deciding about the human body. So actually, my decision that I decided to be vaccinated was made in the concern not only for my health, but also for my fellow citizens, for my family. So this is a new element in which I think that there are two possible conclusions from that. One is, I think it's not a proper way of thinking about it. One is that many times we tend to hear, mainly by some politicians, but by some others as well, oh, this is the end of human rights, this individualistic, extreme, liberal thinking about rights, that's the end, and now it will never come back again. And I think it's an extreme conclusion. The second one would say that this pandemic showed our vulnerability and codependence within the society. It means that there are some social responsibility concerning my health as well, and also the healthcare system should take into consideration of the various needs of citizens and their right to access to healthcare. But it doesn't mean that autonomy is not any longer relevant in the decision making about our body. And I think it's very important, but we took another dimension into the decision making, simply take into consideration of other people's needs as well. But I don't see that it undermines autonomy. For many people, it does. So they want to say that, look, you know, it's even a decision about vaccination was not fully autonomous. I agree that some people were threatened. They felt that, you know, maybe they will not be able to freely move to another place. But still, I think that it requires a rebalancing of human rights, but rebalancing in a sense not to undermine the autonomy and the right to decide about our own body, but to put the second generation of human rights, including right to health, as a inherent as a part of the catalog of human rights, not just a kind of rhetorical goals. But it should have a very important role after that, because we realize that without this right, without an access to health, we are unable to exercise our precious human rights in other fields. We couldn't able to meet, for instance. We couldn't exercise of various types of human rights. Also, the privacy rights were infringed, and many others for the sake of safety and security. I think body underwent a very interesting transformation in the modern biotechnology, and also the COVID showed a different aspect. So it is a kind of battlefield now in various political debates. And I think that the argument which says that, you know, it's my body, I can do whatever I want, and in relations to pandemic, it's wrong, because it actually the infection in itself is connect the possibility of infecting another human being mm-hmm. is actually contrary to the harm principle. I may do harm to another person mm-hmm. if I ignore the health of the other person. Mm-hmm. And in healthcare law, infectious diseases always constituted a kind of exception. So the rules were always slightly different when we spoke about infection, because it affects not only the person who is concerned, mm-hmm. but it also affects another human being. And therefore, it cannot be stated that, you know, I can do whatever I want with
mm-hmm.
my body in a case. So the confinement, for instance, itself, it was a serious restrictions. We all had to be... refrain from sometimes even going to the street, and it was a very heavy restrictions, and it's I think most people complied with that, so they understood the therefore I'm telling it's a new paradigm what the pandemic created, that we had to think about the other human beings as well. Nevertheless, the vaccines were not compulsory, and there were many reasons why, of course, these were newly developed vaccines, and these are not vaccines for children, or at least how it began, it was vaccines for adults and not for mm-hmm. children. But the truth that many decisions about the human body on the genetics, pre-implantation, genetic testings, or I also dealt with the genome editing, and of course previously abortion, is all about the frontiers of the human body. So there are many similar debates, but I think they were testing our capacity to decide about of our bodily integrity or liberty differently than in case of pandemic, which had this very strong collective dimension, because we are all interested in that we can go back to of a free life, but we cannot go alone back to free life, but it has have a collective dimension. And one of the most important ethical norm in the Council of Europe mm-hmm. is the Oviedo Convention, and which states of the primacy of the human being. And I think that it also puts human being ahead of the sole interest of society and even science. Even if there is something very important, scientific research, it cannot be claimed that because of that, the human beings is only on the second place. So that should be valued human beings. But it's a general rule, and in the disaster ethics or in the pandemia, this is different. We tend to think in a very static categories, which mm-hmm. I think is always wrong. We have to re-examine these positions. And pandemic also, I think, gave a lot of food for thought for bioethicists and those who deal with human rights, but the new technologies as well. And the two have some parallel concerns. For instance, we knew that some of the vaccines which have been used in the time of the COVID pandemic were based on an entirely new technology, messenger RNA technology. And mm-hmm. we are very proud of one of the inventor was Katalin Karikó, a scientist from Hungary who worked on this invention. But nevertheless, it seems that how we attach to this novelty in intervention of the human body, it is also something which people had to understand. And it's not evident for many people. Maybe some of the reactions to rejection of the vaccines were related to how people consume and how they think about the new technologies. I think I mentioned of genome editing, and that's also a big topic. And just before the COVID pandemic, it has been highly contested because the first genome edited babies were born in China, and the world started to react. And of course, there were different ethical concerns about how we can consume these new technologies. It was November 2018 when the Chinese researcher He Chengkao revealed this birth of the gene-edited babies, Nana and Lulu. And he thought that it will be of a very important discovery, and he will be praised for this discovery. And instead of that, to his biggest surprise, the reaction to his experimentation was highly negative. And this is also of showing that it's sometimes not evident for people what they expect for a novelty. So novelty is not, when we're speaking about human beings and human bodies, this is a subject of very serious ethical concerns. He didn't have all the necessary ethical approval before he was collecting different embryos, and in cases of Nana and Lulu, he edited their genome in a way that they will be resistant to HIV infection. And of course, someone may ask that is such a new technology, why we are thinking about of resistance as a as an important goal for intervention. Is it enough for intervening into the human genome just because we would like to create of a genetic resistance to HIV? Nevertheless, it's a really a big step in science. And since then, it has been debated whether it was or how it happened and how was it possible that the human humans were born under this condition without any significant ethical approval. There were consent forms. That's also showing that sometimes the paper itself wouldn't give necessary assessment of all ethical issues.
What, for you, are the most pressing ethical challenges they represent?
I think that they represent the issues of what should be the reasons of interference. Could it be just therapy? So, for instance, should it be that we would give a chance for children for living those who might suffer because of serious diseases? Or can we use it to a certain extent for enhancement? So we would provide of some better qualities which a person would otherwise had, and it's beyond the normal traits. So it give, in other words, it would give some advantage to the human being to be faster in sports or intelligence. We are very far from that, but actually, I think it has to be discussed in time. The other question, which I think this is more recognized by legal instruments, such as in the Oviedo Convention, in Article 3, for instance, when they say that they would not support such interventions in the human genome, which would be inheritable by the descendants, which means that intervention, which try to give some better outcome for that individual, either because of a disease or because of some disability or some other condition, is okay when it's safe, when it has been authorized, when it's rational to do, and many other conditions, of course, ethical improvement, etc. But those interventions which make changes in the next generations as well, there, in other words, there is a technical term to describe this. It's called germline intervention in comparison with the somatic line. When it just then in this germline interventions, most people say, and Council of Europe also say, and many experts say, let's not do this, even if it's possible. The other issue is I think also of accessibility. Some people would argue this is broader social aspect. So let's suppose that it's safe. Let's suppose that scientists were able to do that. Then it means that maybe some people who would have access to these treatments, they would feel that they are like a genetic upper class in comparison with those who don't have access to such treatment and they are still living in somewhere in the 20th century type of healthcare. And they would not have these latest therapies. And maybe that would create a new forms of discrimination on between people who have access to these treatment and maybe even some enhancement in comparison to those who have no access to such type of intervention. I think all of us have seen, at least when we were young, the Gattaca movie, which is about these two types of worlds. So I think that it's, for instance, it's a contrast between the two brothers. One is who was born just naturally because of love and have all kind of weaknesses and even some minor disabilities and heart problems and short-sighted, which would not able to provide him chances to get a good job. And nevertheless, he tries very hard. And he tried to beat his go against his genetic destiny. So I think these questions, although that was, of course, hypothetical, it was just in a film, it was the science fiction. But I think this science fiction, some of the questions actually relevant to think about how we imagine human beings in the 21st century. I think that we are living in a very interesting times, and we all, I think we have to be a little bit more biologically literate. Unfortunately, in many countries, the education system totally separates from one another the social and humanities on one hand and natural sciences, and there is no communication between the two. And I think that there were so many episodes not only in the current pandemic and not only in genome editing, not only in a lot of issues related to stem cell research, when the problem was that these two fields did not communicate enough with each other. I think that social scientists need to be engaged in such debates, and also scientists, biologists, molecular biologists, doctors should reveal their problems and their hesitations and ambiguities, because they include wider social issues and also often ethical issues. And then I think it would be, have a much better outcome if there would be a transparency and discussion in that. And we still think that people are not adequately informed in these issues, and they often retrospectively hear about such fundamental cutting-edge new technologies or changes in biology, and also in both in terms of the current pandemia and also in terms of genome editing. Last year, I was very happy that two female scientists, Jennifer Doudna and Emmanuelle Charpentier, received the Nobel Prize for genome editing. And Jennifer Doudna is such a scientist that she repeatedly expressed her ethical concerns. And I think the best way is when the scientist is there to show the fragility. Because of project applications, because of the fame, many times scientists are somehow think that they have to be in the role of a scientist who knows everything, who discovered something of major. Just let's think about in the early 21st century when we how we spoke about the Human Genome Project. We learned the language of God and we discovered the Rosetta Stone of humankind and such. And now I think the modest scientists, modest and responsible scientists, can do a much better job in understanding of multiple ethical component of the research. And there are, I somehow I've seen more female scientists who try to express their worries, and also they make a claim. They understand how big responsibility is to work in such a field. Mm-hmm. Once even Jennifer Doudna told that she had a nightmare when she realized that what this technology is capable to do. And in her nightmare, actually, Hitler was listening to her presentation. That was, of course, in her dream. And she woke up and she felt that this is terrible. It might go to a wrong direction. I think that this kind of intersection between of natural sciences, social science, and I even include my domain, human rights, should be discussed together very early at school.
Merging the human body with technology, uh-huh. like implantation of chips and uh-huh. various communication devices, brain-linked communication devices, and all sort of things, plus what you said, genome editing, stem cells. Where is the end of it? Are we playing God?
These technologies, of course, they were questioning the frontiers of the human bodies, the capacity of the human body. Sometimes we go too much ahead and there is a kind of correction. But the it's very difficult to see in this field what are the limitations. I think that many times one technology just replacing the older one. Mm-hmm. For instance, before, just one concrete example, which actually related to a legal case in front of the Strasbourg Human Rights Court, Costan Pavan case I'm referring to. This was about when in the family they had a genetic disease which prevented them to have healthy children, and they lost actually pregnancies. But what Italian authorities told to the couple, just go, abortion is allowed, so if it again goes the wrong direction, you can get abortion. And of course, abortion is traumatic for the person who is concerned, and the pre-implantation genetic testing would prevent this woman to undergo repeatedly to pregnancy and abortion, because of this genetic condition. Mm-hmm. And this new technology actually helps to substitute the older one, which was abortion based on a medical condition, to select the embryo, and then even from, since in vitro fertilization, more embryos can be produced. And from these embryos, they can select the ones which will result in a healthy child and which will provide a healthy offspring to the couple. So that this is an example that sometimes technologies are helping to provide some corrections which previously we couldn't offer to people. Also, we have to think about not just the birth, but also the aging society. And we know that many people suffer of that they lose some capacities in the later stage of their life. And here, again, there are various enhancement technologies. There are a lot of maybe some implants also, and sometimes a medication which helps them to live a full life, even if they had some diminished capacities because of the aging process. And I think no one should claim that this is dangerous. I think that if people had a longer lifespan, as it seems that we will face soon with many people who reach the age of 100, for instance, and it does matter whether they are, what health, what mm-hmm. quality what of life they mm-hmm. experience. Yes, exactly. And in this way, technology can again help. So I think we should think about technology as an option, and we should integrate into the needs of the society and needs of the human beings. When it's just a kind of pour la pour and I'm showing some fame or technical virtuosity, then of course it's another issue. But I think that they are justifiable social needs, which can be helped by the technology. And also the quality in life, whatever is the lifespan of the human being, if it can be improved by new technologies, I think that it's also of a strong justification to use this technology.
We are discussing technologies, advancements, a lot of really new things requiring substantial amounts of money. However, many of us either witnessed themselves or through the media, through the images on our television screens, some drastic images of triage of patients in hospitals. What can we say to patients and to people? This is what medicine can do for you. This is what science can do for humanity. But this is the everyday life, what a normal, ordinary regional hospital with its staff can do for you when you are a patient coming to that hospital.
I think it was a huge human trauma for the whole world, and we should learn from it. I said that the world was in large not prepared for this pandemic, and preparedness is a basic condition also in healthcare. I also think that, therefore, I argued in the beginning of the interview that right to healthcare should be valued much more than it was before. How we allocate healthcare resources, they have to take into consideration that it might happen. We should not underplan the health costs or the health budget, but rather to provide some possibility when something happens like that, that we would able to adapt to these needs. I think it was very sad. Also in my country, they evacuated the hospital beds. Many people's healthcare were canceled even during the first wave. And I also think that suddenly we were in many, for instance, anesthesiologist association who issued guideline in Italy after looking at the very dark reality in Bergamo's hospital. They immediately went to the triage system. And I also, also in Hungary, the Hungarian Medical Chamber issued some guidelines of how allocate scarce resources. And it didn't happen actually how the scarce resources allocation was previously envisaged. For instance, there were debates in on terminally ill patients or how to allocate of the dialysis machines. It happened in a large scale when huge amount of people were prevented to get the necessary care, and even sometimes unrelated to the COVID care, but still very important care, they couldn't get access. So I think we should learn from that. It was a real trauma. And I think it should shake the all societies and to think about healthcare very differently. It's not a luxury. It's not something that people can buy in a private insurance. Many rich people got the COVID. This is really a collective effort. No matter how good health insurance you have, in the time of pandemia, we are very similarly situated. I also think what was very sad, and it has an ethical component, many people, old people or sick people, died totally alone without having a possibility to speak to their relatives. And of course, there could have been some options for that. In some hospitals, they try nurses to use iPhones or smart cameras so that they can still see their relatives, but because of the nature of the infectious nature of COVID-19, they couldn't even say goodbye, which is, I think it was a terrible for the human dignity, also these people to die in such a devastating condition and not seeing their relatives. So it was definitely one of the biggest trauma and crises in our life, which I think we should not just say that, okay, we are over it or hopefully over it. Mm-hmm. We have to think about other parts of the world as well. This is very collective, how we allocate vaccines. So it's not just many countries think about only in their territories. Actually, it's collective also in that dimension that if the virus is not eradicated elsewhere, it will come back. So we have to think about also other countries, those who don't have access to vaccines, to help them. And it is really of a collective trauma and needs a collective attitude. And I also think that what I say about human rights and the role of right to health as a major lesson from the pandemic, it's not just right to health in books or in legal documents, but the right to health is implemented, enforced, just as other rights is taken very seriously, because this is, I think, one of the major lessons of the pandemic. And it has some ethical component, but it also has some financial, political, and legal component, how we assess the lesson of this terrible trauma which we suffered together in the whole world.
Ďakujem, že ste počúvali môj podcast V ženskom rode. Ak vás tento rozhovor zaujal, vypočujte si aj tie ostatné. V ženskom rode môžete sledovať a zdieľať aj na Facebooku. Napíšte mi svoje názory, nápady a hodnotenie. Už o týždeň v stredu sa na vás teším s novým dielom.